past on the outside, risking the slippery walls. The other, more terrifying option was to crawl underneath the monster's body. Its crab legs emerged from either side of the body, leaving a large open space underneath. He ruled out crawling under the monster because it would involve crawling under a monster. Instead, he rushed forward, trying to half-slide along the side of pipe to get past the creature's legs. He failed immediately. His feet slipped out from under him, and he slid down into the creature's legs. It raised one of them, which Jason realized tapered into a point as it came down and stabbed into him. Jason cried out with pain, but he still held a death grip on his dagger. He slid the blade across the monster's leg, skittering over the hard shell until it found a vulnerable joint. The knife slotted right in between the plates of shell, and he sliced the edge across the cartilage. As the dagger cut into flesh, he used one of his abilities. He felt power surge out from deep inside his body, electric and exhilarating. It passed through his arm and into the dagger, filling the weapon with magic. Ability: Leech Bite, Blood. Special Attack: Melee, Drain, Wounding, Blood. Cost: Low Stamina, Cooldown, None. Current Rank: Iron, 0%. Effect: Iron. Inflicts or refreshes the bleeding condition. Drains a small amount of health and stamina when refreshing the bleeding condition. Bleeding. Affliction. Wounding. Blood. Deals ongoing damage by causing or increasing blood loss. As a wounding effect, this condition absorbs and negates an amount of incoming healing, after which this affliction immediately ends. As Jason yanked the knife free, blood sprayed out of the joint. The monster raised its leg sharply, pulling it free of Jason while releasing a high-pitched alien shriek. Along with Jason's power, the magic of his snake-tooth dagger did its own work. Weapon: Nightfang has inflicted umbral snake venom on Shab. Jason scrambled to escape its legs as one of them rose up, poised to stab him again. He found himself directly underneath the creature, lying on his back. In front of him was the creature's underbelly, which turned out to be fleshy and unprotected by shell. Jason called up the power within him again, raking the vulnerable underside of the monster with his dagger. Ability: Punish, Sin. Special Attack: Melee, Curse. Cost: Low Mana. Cooldown: None. Current Rank: Iron, 0%. Effect: Iron. Inflicts necrotic damage and the Sin affliction. Sin, affliction, curse, stacking. All necrotic damage taken is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Blood and other fluids splashed over Jason from the long wound, leaving him sputtering salty fluid as he shimmied on his back to behind the creature. The monster itself went wild at the wound to its underside, breaking its pincers out of Hiram's grip and flailing about with more high-pitched shrieking. One of the monster's legs impaled Jason's leg by accident as the creature thrashed about. It didn't seem to notice, yanking its leg back out again. Jason turned himself over and crawled painfully away, still spitting out monster juice. After getting free of the maddened monster, Jason looked back to see Hiram doing his best to hold the creature's attention, both arms wrapped around one of the pincers. Without getting up, Jason held out a hand towards the creature and chanted out a spell. Your fate is to suffer! There was no visible effect, but Jason felt the power surge out of him to enact itself upon the creature. Ability: Inexorable Doom. Doom. Spell: Curse. Cost: Moderate Mana. Cooldown: None. Current Rank: Iron, 0%. Effect: Iron. Periodically applies an additional instance of each stacking curse, disease, poison, or unholy affliction the target is suffering from. This is a curse effect. This effect cannot be cleansed while any other curse or disease, poison, or unholy affliction is in effect. Jason forced himself to his feet, ignoring the pain from his stabbed leg and abdomen as he limped farther from the creature. Hiram! Jason yelled past the creature. Let it go and back off. It'll die on its own. On the long wagon ride through the desert, Jason had spent hours going over his abilities, discussing with the others how to use them. Except Anissa, who refused to help him use his unclean powers. The time spent strategizing proved its worth now. He knew how to withdraw and let the afflictions to do their work. It was obvious when considering things calmly beforehand, but in the heat of the moment, he may well have kept attacking, putting himself and Hiram at unnecessary risk. Jason's first special attack had inflicted the bleeding affliction. This was effectively a powerful anticoagulant, making blood loss all the worse. The second special attack inflicted a curse called Sin that increased any necrotic damage that was suffered. The dagger inflicted a necrotic poison, which was amplified by the curse. Finally, Jason's spell would continually stack up both the poison and curse, increasing their effect. The result of all this was an exponentially escalating necrosis that would inevitably overcome the creature. All they had to do was wait. Jason and Hiram backed off, while the monster between them thrashed about. Dark fluid started oozing from its joints as it staggered towards Hiram, but soon it collapsed, the dying flesh in its legs unable to hold the creature's weight. The pincers lifted up weakly in a last gesture of defiance before falling still. You have defeated Shab. Quest, Waterfall Monster. Objective complete. Defeat Shab, 1 of 1. 50 Water Quintessence Gems have been added to your inventory. Quest complete. 100 Iron Rank Spirit Coins have been added to your inventory. Jason was happy with how his abilities worked out, although he had one major concern. He was reliant on necrotic damage for his abilities to take full effect, and his only current source of that damage was not his abilities, but his magic dagger. The others assured him that he would get such a power, but until then, he would be reliant on an external tool. Hiram and Jason cautiously approached the creature from either side. Jason had 2 painful wounds, and he could see an injury on Hiram's arm. Hiram stood over the creature, cradling his bleeding arm.
"What did you do to it?" Hiram asked.
The monster was oozing black fluid from under its shell, which gave off a horrifying stench. I wasn't confident about cracking that shell, Jason said. So I killed it from the inside out. Jason held a hand over the creature and chanted a spell. As your life was mine to reap, your death is mine to harvest. Ability: Blood Harvest. Blood. Spell: Drain. Cost: Low mana. Cooldown: None. Current rank: Iron 0, 0%. Iron: drain the remnant life force of a recently deceased body, replenishing health, stamina, and mana. Only affects targets with blood. Dark red light rose from within the creature. Jason's aura sense told him it was the monster's remnant life force made visible. It siphoned up into Jason's hand, draining away from the dead monster. As it did, Jason felt the sting of healing flesh as his wounds closed over. His body was reinvigorated as his stamina and mana were replenished. As he consumed the red light, the flesh inside the shell withered, the shell itself growing brittle and crumbling. By the time the red light was fully devoured, the monster was little more than a withered husk. Hiram had been looking askance at Jason as he recited sinister spells and drained the residual life force from the monster.
"Did you just say you were harvesting death?" Hiram asked.
"It's just the incantation for a spell," Jason said.
"You sound like an evil farmer."
"You didn't even see my evil trowel." Jason pulled a rag and a bottle of water from his inventory, cleaning his dagger before slipping it back into its sheath. Then he tapped a finger on the gutted shell of the monster. "Would you like to loot Shab?"
"You might want to stand back for this," Jason said. "There's going to be a smell."
"Worse than the one that's there already?" Hiram asked.
"Yeah, it's worse." They backed off, and Jason gave his mental assent to loot the body. What was left of the monster rapidly dissolved into rainbow-colored smoke before vanishing. Tragically, Jason had forgotten the monster fluids that had splattered onto him while he was underneath it. They too dissolved, the rainbow smoke coming from his nose and mouth where the fluids had splashed into them. He fell to the ground, heaving his breakfast onto the base of the tunnel.
"You all right?" Hiram asked.
Eventually, Jason gave a coughing nod.
"Monster core, iron rank, has been added to your inventory. Shell skin potion has been added to your inventory. 10 iron rank spirit coins have been added to your inventory."
"Not worth it."
Jason took a tin of healing unguent from his inventory and handed it over to Hiram.
You know what that is? Jason asked.
Hiram pulled the lid off the tin, sniffing at the contents. He nodded and immediately started rubbing ointment into his bloody arm.
Boss! Griff called out from the other side of the fence. I came back when I couldn't see or hear the waterfall. What happened?
No idea, Hiram said, still rubbing ointment on his arm. I imagine people are coming up here to check on things, but I'm not sure what they'll accomplish. I think we might need to bring in those adventurers of yours, Jason.
I was thinking the same thing, Jason said, without turning to face the others. His gaze was focused on where the tunnel went deeper into the mountain.
Is it just me? He asked. Or is the aperture more blue than it was before?
Hiram followed Jason's gaze down the tunnel. The blue shimmer of the aperture was definitely brighter than it had been before.
I think, Hiram said, it might be time to get out of...
He was cut off by a wall of water, erupting through the aperture and down on top of them. It smashed them together in a tangle of arms and legs. Both were blasted down the tunnel and hurled into the air, hundreds of meters above the ground. Chapter 28. How did you all fit in there? Water crashed into Jason like a derailed train, plowing him straight into Hiram and blasting them both out the end of the tunnel. Sensations came faster than he could process. Pain, wet, disorientation. He couldn't breathe or even tell which way was up. Jason and Hiram had clutched onto each other reflexively, their limbs tangled together. Landscape blurred past as they spanned through the air, tumbling like the now resumed waterfall. Jason's first coherent thought was Hiram slipping away, and he reasserted his grip. Darkness emerged from Jason, enveloping both men. Extending the weight-reducing function of Cloak of Night increases the cost from low mana per second to moderate mana per second. Their downward plunge was reduced to a drift, floating out and away from the waterfall. Their wild spinning was arrested, and they were able to orient themselves as they descended. Jason was grateful that his cloak could be conjured at a thought. If it had required an incantation like a spell, he doubted he would have been able to get the words out. Only now that they were free of the water and gently drifting, could they even speak intelligibly.
"What in the God's merry garden is going on?"
Hiram asked, voice tinged with panic. He was half-hugging Jason from the side.
"The first thing you should know," Jason said, "is to not let go."
Hiram lurched as he looked down, almost letting go.
"What did I just say?" Jason asked.
"We're in the sky.
Awesome, right? Are you insane? That was right in my ear."
Jason started laughing madly as they drifted down to the ground.
"This is fantastic," he said.
"You're crazy."
Between the force with which they were ejected from the mountain and the lightness of their reduced weight, they had drifted some way from the mountain before they lightly touched down. They landed close to the channel leading from the pool under the mountain to the village lake. Hiram immediately fell to the grass and hugged the ground, tension escaping his body in sobbing laughs. Jason took a look around. They were about halfway between the mountain and the village, in an expanse of shin-high grass. The channel ran dead straight through the grass from the base of the waterfall to the village. He could see people heading for the mountain trail he and Hiram had taken earlier. None of them seemed to have noticed his and Hiram's descent. On the other side of the channel were a bunch of children who had been looking up at the absent waterfall until they spotted Jason and Hiram fall from the sky. Jason gave them a wave. He then looked back up at the mountain and saw how far he had just fallen. A grin spread across his face. "If this is the adventuring life," he mused, "I think I want some more."
"You're a crazy person,"
Hiram said, getting unsteadily to his feet. He looked uncertainly at Jason, still shrouded in the cloak of stars. Under the desert sun, the void black stood out more than the starlight.
"Hiram," Jason said, still looking up at the mountain. "Are they what I think they are?"
Hiram followed Jason's line of sight to the top of the waterfall. He spotted objects being tossed out the same way he and Hiram had been, at least a dozen of them.
"People?" Hiram asked. They were distant and hard to make out as they fell.
"Those aren't people,"
Jason said. As they fell from the sky, the objects grew larger in their vision. Horror crossed Hiram's face as he recognized the shape of the creatures.
"More of those things," Hiram said, with horror.
"Don't be too worried," Jason said. "A shab is a half-shark, half-crab, neither of which have wings." The large creatures lacked Jason's weight-reducing power and fell well short of the distance Jason and Hiram had reached. The first one hit the ground with a sickening crunch, with others soon following. Jason counted 17 by the time they finished falling, most of which died on impact. Those that fell either side of the water channel hit the ground and didn't get up. Of the six that landed in the water, two struck the surface at a bad angle. Hitting water flat from that height was as good as hitting solid concrete, with similar results. The other four survived, but were clearly injured as they staggered out of the water. New quest, protect the village. A number of shabs have emerged from the astral space. Intercept them before they wreak havoc in the village. Objective, defeat shab, 0 of 4. Reward, iron rank, uncommon, magic bracelet. One of the monsters had emerged on Jason and Hiram's side of the channel, the others on the far side. They all looked about, disoriented, then made a straight line for the village. The sideways walk of the creatures wasn't a breakneck pace, but was faster than what Jason had seen from the one in the tunnel.
"What do you think, Hiram?" Jason asked.
Hiram's face was stern as he stared at the creature on their side of the channel. It looked to have at least two broken legs, and the shell around its body was cracked and oozing.
"I think I can take one," he said, "if it's injured. But what about those kids on the other side?"
"I'll get the kids away," Jason said. "Then I'll deal with the other shabs."
"Are you up for that?" Hiram asked.
"I guess I'll have to be," Jason said, flashing Hiram a grin. "Don't worry, I've still got a gimmick or two." Jason started sprinting towards the channel. It was a natural waterway, 30 or so meters across. Jason leapt off the short embankment, landing on the gently flowing surface of the water as if it were solid ground. He laughed with delight as he sprinted over the surface to the other side. He ducked down briefly as one of the dead shabs floated past, long enough to brush his fingers over its shell. "This monster corpse is unclaimed. Would you like to loot shab?" Jason kept moving as he looted the body, rainbow smoke rising behind him. 1. Monster core, iron rank, has been added to your inventory. 10. Water quintessence have been added to your inventory. 10. Iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. He recalled an odd potion he had looted from the first shab. After climbing onto the grass on the opposite embankment, he pulled it out of his inventory. Item, shell skin potion, iron rank, uncommon. Potion that increases the hardness of skin at the cost of agility. Consumable, natural. Effect, skin is hardened against physical attack, and speed, attribute, is decreased for 10 minutes. Uses remaining, 1 of 1. The kids, 5 of them, came running up to Jason with the fearlessness of children.
"Are those things monsters?"
one of them asked. "Yes," Jason told them. "You need to run back to the village."
"Are you going to fight them?"
"Yes, you need to run back to the village."
"Can we watch?"
Jason sighed and dropped down to one knee. "Look, everyone," he told them, "I have an important mission for you. I need you to go back to the village and warn everyone about the monsters." He took 5 iron rank spirit coins from his inventory, holding them in front of the children. "This is a very important job," he told them solemnly, "and I need some brave junior adventurers to help me. Do you think you can help?" Jason smiled at the 5 eagerly nodding heads, handing them each a coin. "Hurry up now," he told them. "Warn everyone fast as you can." As the kids sprinted away, Jason turned to look at the 3 shabs that were scurrying alongside the channel in his direction. They had emerged from the water much closer to the mountain than where Jason had landed, placing him comfortably between them and the village. "Why didn't you stay in the water?" he wondered. "Did getting belted down here by water give you a complex?" Their sideways crab walk was faster than they could manage moving forwards, but their injuries were slowing them down. Jason looked at the potion in his hand, which would slow him down as well. He wasn't skilled enough that the extra agility would do him any good, so he drank it.
You have used a defense potion, hardening your skin and reducing your speed attribute. Until the remnant magic fully dissipates, consuming further defense potions will result in toxic side effects.
He could feel his skin tightening, like he'd left it too long in the dryer. It felt like old leather as he flexed, restrictive but tough. He looked at the approaching creatures, wondering about the range of his spell. He could feel his abilities instinctively, realizing that anything he could clearly see was a viable target. He fixed his gaze on each monster, chanting a spell for each.
Your fate is to suffer.
The inexorable doom spell would add more and more of any stacking effect on the victim. The Shabs didn't have any on them yet, but Jason would change that as soon as they caught up with him. He drew his dagger. He ran the blade across the back of his forearm, but it didn't draw blood. Huh. He realized he should have done it before drinking the potion. He gripped the blade tightly in his fist and yanked it out, this time managing a shallow cut on his palm. Weapon, Nightfang, has inflicted umbral snake venom on Outworlder. You have resisted umbral snake venom. Umbral snake venom does not take effect. You have gained an instance of resistant.
Jason swore, having forgotten that his dagger was poisonous. Luckily, it didn't take effect. There was now an icon representing the resistant buff next to his mana and stamina bars.
Not that I want to complain, but why didn't the poison work?
Combat log. You have been afflicted with iron rank poison, umbral snake venom. Ability, Sin Eater, gives you increased resistance to all afflictions. You have resisted umbral snake venom. Resisting an affliction has triggered ability, Sin Eater, granting you an instance of resistant.
Sin Eater was one of the abilities Jason had awakened from a feast stone. Most of his planning and discussion involved his active abilities, while this passive power went largely overlooked. The sluggish pace of the injured Shabs meant they were still some distance from him, so he had time to pull up the description.
Ability, Sin Eater, Sin. Special ability, Holy. Cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, Iron, 0%. Effect, Iron. Increase resistance to afflictions. Gain an instance of resistant each time you resist an affliction or cleanse an affliction using essence abilities.
Resistant. Boon, Holy, stacking. Resistance to afflictions is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Consume to negate instances of vulnerable on a 1-1 basis.
Not bad, he said. It's a holy power too. From the sin essence, no less.
Jason glanced down at his hand, which had a line of blood, but the wound had closed. The healing his familiar provided couldn't swiftly regenerate the kind of impaling wounds he took from the Shab, although thinking back, it may not have been pure adrenaline that kept him moving. A little cut on the hand, though, the familiar made short work of.
Oh, come on!
He put his dagger in hand and yanked it free again, reopening the wound.
Weapon, Nightfang, has inflicted umbral snake venom on Outworlder. You have resisted umbral snake venom. Umbral snake venom does not take effect. You have gained an insistence of resistant.
I'm liking this ability, he said, as the number 2 appeared on the resistant icon. He held his hand out, wounded palm pointed at the ground. Leeches started pouring out, like water from the world's most terrifying shower. By the time the pile was finished, the total volume of leeches was more than his entire body.
How did you all fit in there?
The pile had no way to respond. Jason intrinsically understood the nature of the familiar and knew there wasn't anything like telepathic communication. He would have to command them verbally, although he wasn't sure how that worked.
Do leeches have ears?
The pile said nothing.
We'll have to work out a system.
Chapter 29. That's What Adventurers Do.
The Shabs were finally drawing close.
Din Din's leechy,
Jason told the pile. It undulated slowly in the direction of the Shabs.
I've got to come up with a better name.
The approaching Shabs hadn't regrouped after their fall from the sky, so were coming at Jason individually. The first one gave up its side shuffling when it spotted Jason, turning its shark head to face him. He had time to take a good look at the creature. A shark in a purple and red shell, with legs halfway between a spider and a crab. Above the mouth full of jagged teeth, it had tiny crayfish eyes, black orbs waving back and forth on short stalks.
You certainly are creepy.
As the first shab approached, it seemed to lock onto the leech pile in its path. It lunged with both pincers, which dug into the pile with little effect. Instead, the pile slithered over the pincers and up the arms. It started shaking its arms to get them off. Some were tossed away, others crawling over the shell in search of the gaps hiding vulnerable flesh. The remaining pile made for the creature's legs, crawling up and over it. Some leeches were squished between sections of shell, but more and more found something soft to sink their teeth into. The monster started shrieking. Sanguine Horror has inflicted bleeding on shab. Sanguine Horror has inflicted leech toxin on shab. Sanguine Horror has inflicted necrotoxin on shab. Bleeding already in effect. Bleeding is refreshed. Sanguine Horror has inflicted leech toxin on shab. Sanguine Horror has inflicted necrotoxin on shab. The notifications came thick and fast as every leech that found purchase delivered the same bleed effect Jason used, plus two different kinds of poison. Leech toxin, affliction, poison, blood, stacking. When bleeding is negated, an instance of leech toxin on the target is consumed to reapply bleeding. Additional instances can be accumulated. On top of inflicting damage through blood loss, the strength of the bleeding affliction was that it soaked up healing, negating its effect. The leech toxin would reapply the bleed, requiring even more healing to eliminate it. He didn't think the shab had any rapid healing ability, but this would be useful against monsters with the power to regenerate. So long as enough of the leech toxin was applied, it would refresh the bleed over and over, leaving any healing stopped cold. The other poison the leech inflicted was much the same as Jason's dagger.
Necrotoxin, affliction, poison, stacking. Inflicts ongoing necrotic damage until poison is cleansed. Additional instances have a cumulative effect.
Unlike Jason, the leeches didn't require an external source of necrotic damage. They were a tiny army of ambulatory poison daggers. Jason was going to move in on it, but the shab was already in bad shape. He felt a little pointless compared to his familiar. His inexorable doom spell was already on the shabs, but compared to what the leeches were doing, his spell adding a few more afflictions was barely relevant. The second shab was drawing close, and Jason went forwards to meet it. He tried to move around the pincers to get his knife into one of the leg joints, but was met with immediate difficulty. When not restricted by a tunnel, a shab could easily skitter sideways to keep its savage mouth pointed right at its prey. The defensive potion slowing Jason down didn't help. A pincer came at Jason. He avoided it clamping down on him, but took a glancing blow to the head. His skin might have been hardened by a potion, but it still rang his bell, sending him stumbling back. He glanced over at the first shab, which was woozily staggering back and forth, covered in leeches.
I think my familiar might be stronger than me, Jason said.
Good job, leechy. See if you can't catch that next one.
Leeches started dropping off the stricken shab, and Jason continued to square off with his own monster. Realizing there was no going around the pincers, he tried a new tack, moving straight in. A pincer shot out to grab him, and he raised his left arm, letting the pincer have it. The sharp pincer broke through even his toughened skin, applying crushing force to his arm and trying to drag him to its mouth. For the price of letting the pincer grab his empty-handed left arm, his knife-wielding right was free to strike. With Jason's arm in its grip, the pincer was no longer jerking about. Jason slammed the point of his dagger into the joint of the pincer. Weapon, Nightfang, has inflicted umbral snake venom on shab. Special attack, Punish, has inflicted sin on shab. The creature shrieked, releasing Jason's arm. He stumbled back, the dagger sliding free of the creature. The shab lashed out with its other pincer, and Jason gave up the injured arm again. Whether from the previous injury or the rage of the monster, the pincer clamping down was much more agonizing. He screamed at the pain, but fighting through it, savagely stabbed with his knife, again finding the joint of the pincer. It was the monster's turn to shriek as it once again released Jason's arm. Special attack, Leech Bite, has inflicted bleeding on shab. Jason stumbled away from the shab, his left arm hanging limp and dripping blood. Unlike his familiar, Jason couldn't pile on the afflictions rapidly, but now all he needed was time. The inexorable doom spell would live up to its name, escalating the curse and the poison until the monster was overcome. So long as he could stay out of the creature's reach, its defeat was inevitable. But Jason wasn't done. The shab might be quick side to side, but just by jogging backward, Jason created distance. Then he stopped, held up his good arm, and chanted a spell.
"Your blood is not yours to keep, but mine on which to feast."
Ability, feast of blood, blood. Spell, drain, blood. Base cost, moderate mana. Cooldown, 30 seconds. Current rank, iron, 0%. Effect, iron. Drain health and stamina. Only affects targets with bleeding wounds or who are suffering from the bleeding affliction. Red life force shone out of the shab. Some of it started streaming out from the wounds Jason had inflicted and into his waiting hand. Jason felt the healing sting in his wounded arm, but the life force drained was limited. Unlike his blood harvest spell, Feast of Blood didn't take all the life force, but he could use it on living enemies. Jason's arm was still far from healed, but at least now he could move it a little. The shab let out an ear-piercing shriek, driven to madness by the effect of Jason's spell. The red glow retracted back into the shab, which seemed frantic as Jason plucked away its life force. It scrambled madly, but was not physiologically designed for pursuit. If anything, its panicked movement was slowing it down. Jason easily kept out of reach as his affliction slowly overtook it.
You have defeated Shab. Defeat Shab, 1 of 4.
Jason glanced at the shab the leeches had left behind. It was an emptied-out shell, collapsed on the ground. He looked around to where the leeches had moved to intercept the third shab. Spotting them, he slapped an exasperated hand over his face. The third shab had apparently seen what the sanguine horror did to the first one and was trying to avoid it. The leeches moved slowly, but the shab was apparently unwilling to take its eyes off the leeches long enough to crab-walk away. The result was two monsters shuffling around in an awkward circle.
When I said, see if you can't catch it, I didn't actually mean for you to not catch it.
Jason couldn't get past his own shab to intervene, being forced to wait out the ridiculous display.
Defeat shab, 1 of 3.
The number of shabs he needed to kill dropped by one. Looking back over the channel, he saw a bloody and weary Hiram standing over a fallen shab.
Good for you, mate.
Jason's own shab finally collapsed, and he was able to corral the last one into the sanguine horror, which made short work of it.
Quest, protect the village. Objective complete. Defeat shab, 3 of 3. Oasis bracelet has been added to your inventory. Quest complete. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory.
Jason had noticed that his quests were a lot less lucrative than killing cultists, at least in terms of spirit coins. There was the other item, but he could check that later. On the far side of the channel, Hiram was bloodied but triumphant, standing with one foot on a dead shab. He waved broadly at Jason, who waved back. Using his blood harvest spell, Jason drained the remnant life force from the three shabs, healing himself back into pristine condition. He ran a hand over the bloody, but fully intact, arm that had not long ago been badly mangled.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
He looted the shabs, reabsorbed the sanguine horror, and made his way back across the channel. When he got there, he tried to loot Hiram's shab.
This monster kill was not yours. You are unable to loot this monster.
Hey, Hiram, Jason said. Can I loot this corpse?
Sure,
Hiram said.
Jason tried again.
Monster core, iron rank, has been added to your inventory. Water essence has been added to your inventory. 10 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory.
Jason raised his eyebrows at the loot message. From his adventuring companions, Jason had gotten the impression that essences were fairly rare, in spite of his own experiences. He took the essence out of his inventory, a shimmering blue cube reminiscent of the aperture. He held it out to Hiram.
Is that what I think it is?
Hiram asked.
Water essence, Jason confirmed.
I can't take that, Hiram said. Do you know what they're worth?
Jason looked at Hiram, then down at the Shab. He pointed towards the mountain.
The monster came from over there, Jason said. He pointed in the opposite direction.
The village is over there.
He pointed at the ground. You stood right here, right in between them.
He shoved the cube into Hiram's chest. As Hiram stared disbelievingly at the cube in his hands, Jason took out another object he looted from the Shab. It was a monster core, which he had seen before, but this one was iron rank, compared to the lesser ranked ones already in his possession. It was teardrop-shaped, like a lesser core, but slightly larger and a more vibrant red. Item: monster core, iron rank, common. The magic core of an iron rank monster, crafting material, magic core. Effect: common component for ritual magic and magic item creation, can be absorbed directly to advance essence abilities. You are able to absorb monster core, iron. Absorb, yes, no.
Jason's eyes went wide when he saw it could advance his essence abilities. He was tempted to try it immediately, but decided to ask Rufus and Farrah first. He didn't want to wind up with any strange side effects.
Hiram and Jason sat down on the grass for a well-earned rest. Hiram's eyes didn't shift from the essence in his hands.
I can probably help you out with an essence ritual for that, Jason said. Essence rituals were one of the most fundamental magical practices, and the knowledge Jason got from the skill book was more than sufficient to perform one.
No thanks, Hiram said. I'm saving this for when my granddaughter is old enough. An essence makes you an important person in the village, which is why I'm in charge of watching over the aperture.
How old do you have to be to use an essence? Jason asked. That earned him a strange look from Hiram.
I'm from a very isolated area, Jason said. We don't really know anything about magic there. I'm just starting to learn this stuff for myself.
Must be pretty damn isolated, Hiram said. If you try and absorb an essence too young, there are problems. Never seen it myself, but I've heard it's bad. There's a simple test to see if your body's ready. It's usually at around 16 or 17, but it can go a year or two either way.
Thanks, Jason said. I still have a lot to learn.
Well, I owe you, Hiram said, getting to his feet. So does the village. I don't want to think about what would have happened if four of those things got in there.
Jason likewise stood up.
I'm sure it would have been fine, he said. If they made it to the village, my adventurer friends would have seen it and stepped in. That's what adventurers do, right?
That's right, Hiram said, putting a hand on Jason's shoulder. That's what adventurers do.
Chapter 30. Closing the Door Too Hard. In the garden courtyard of the inn, Jason sat comfortably in the late afternoon shade, looking down at a single leech on the ground.
So you've got it, right? He asked.
Left for yes, right for no. That's my left and right, so you're right and left. You have that?
The leech moved to the left.
Okay, that's a yes. Unless you don't have it right and you were trying to say no?
The leech wobbled side to side.
Yeah, I'm confused too. I can't seem to help overcomplicating things.
All right, let's just assume you've got it.
That fine by you?
The leech moved left.
Great. So do you have a name?
The leech moved right.
No name. Okay. Would you like me to give you one?
The leech moved left.
That's good, Jason said. I don't want to keep calling you leechy. That'd be like Gary calling me humany. Or outworldery, I guess. Not being human anymore is a bit of a blow.
Who are you talking to?
Gary asked, walking into the courtyard. I'm trying to come up with a name for my familiar, Jason said.
How do you know it doesn't have one already? Farrah said, following Gary into the courtyard.
I asked, Jason said.
And it answered?
Gary asked. We have a system, Jason said. Where have you all been? There was some excitement here.
We found out the guy had a cabin in the desert, Farrah said. There's a cave where he'd go searching for Earth quintessence. We thought that might be where he'd hold up.
Jason heard a door slam open inside the inn. He got up and went into the common room to look. He saw Martha, the landlady, doing the same. What they saw was a fuming Rufus stomp loudly up the stairs, followed by the sound of another slamming door. How did he get that reed door to slam so loud? Jason wondered aloud. They're really light. A heady combination of finesse and rage, Farrah said. I take it the guy wasn't in his cabin then, Jason said.
Oh, he was there, Farrah said. Anissa killed him before he could get a word out.
Jason winced. I guess she was serious about the guy being her church's to deal with, Jason said. Why was Rufus so set on talking to the guy anyway?
We can sit down for that, Gary said. But I could really use a drink first.
Just use a spirit coin, Farrah said. We can do better than that, Jason said. Martha, could we get some of that fruit punch?
Anything for you, sweetie.
What is it with you and the people in this village? Farrah asked as they walked back into the courtyard and sat down at a picnic table. I could swear I heard people talking about you when we came back into town. It's the dashing good looks, Jason said. Farrah and Gary shared a look. Hey, Jason said sadly. He knelt down and held his hand out for the leech to crawl onto, then lifted it up to rest on his shoulder.
Are you sure you want to put that there? Gary asked. I don't think I'd want those teeth that close to my ear.
He won't hurt me, Jason said. He's my little guy. I think he's a guy. I think I read that leeches can switch it around.
You are a strange man, Farrah said.
Martha came in with a huge jug filled with juice and large chunks of ice. Her nephew, Harold, followed with a trio of glasses, getting a swat from Martha when he goggled at the leech on Jason's shoulder. Thanks, Martha, Jason said, filling each of the glasses. One was even a Gary-sized mug with a big handle. After the landlady and her nephew left, Jason asked again about Rufus.
The area we come from, Farrah said, has a higher density of magic than this region, so the monsters there are stronger on average. In this region, iron rank monsters are the norm, with a good smattering of bronze rank. Silvers can show up, but only very occasionally.
But where we come from, Gary added, you get more silver rank monsters than anything. You see as many golds as you do bronze, and sometimes even diamond rank monsters. And if iron ranks do appear, there's always about 40 of the pricks.
He chugged half of his giant glass at a go, topping it off from the jug. You're from one of those big cities? Jason asked.
That's right, Gary said. Vitesse.
The City of Flowers, Farrah added.
That's weird, Jason said. There's a language in my world where vitesse means speed.
Not how it works in our city, Gary said.
Vitesse is as leisurely as any place you'll find, Farrah explained. Culture, cuisine, lots of money floating around, even at the low end. A laborer in vitesse can make as much as a craftsman here.
Not a good craftsman, Gary said, but still.
What does any of this have to do with Rufus being angry? Jason asked.
Well, Gary said, around here an iron rank adventurer can wander about in relative safety. If some monsters show up, then an iron rank adventurer can go after them on their own, or with a small team.
But around Vitesse, Farrah said, that's just asking for death. Even bronze rankers go out with a silver ranked escort. Coming here was our big chance to strike out on our own.
Prove ourselves, Gary said.
And then you went and got captured, Jason said. Rufus is in charge, so he blames himself.
Exactly, Farrah said. But you don't understand the level of pressure on him. His family operates the Remor Academy, which is a big deal everywhere, not just Vitesse.
Let me guess, Jason said. Rufus is the living paragon of this academy's teaching methods, so when he fails, it's a black mark on his family's reputation.
His family isn't like that, Gary said. They understand better than most that failure is a valuable lesson. Rufus is the one putting pressure on himself.
More than anything, he blames himself for putting us in danger, Farrah said. He takes responsibility seriously, and he thinks he let us down. The reason he was obsessed with catching the guy, Farrah said, was so he could find out what he did wrong. Rufus works harder than anyone to avoid making a mistake once, let alone twice. In his eyes, Anissa took away his chance to understand what he did wrong. As far as Rufus is concerned, what Anissa did was the same as putting the team in danger.
Is anyone else getting a shady feeling from Anissa? Jason asked. Like she's quietly on the shonk?
I think that's going a bit far, Gary said.
Probably, Jason said. I'm definitely biased, but think about it. She brought this job to you from her church, right? Then the guy supposedly working for her church sets you up.
The shonk? Farrah asked.
Anissa was in a cage like the rest of us, Gary said.
Sure, Jason said. But she didn't go to the ritual chamber, did she? Who's to say that if I hadn't shown up, there wouldn't be some other excuse to leave her behind? Then she breaks out all by herself?
So did you.
They underestimated me backwards and forwards, Jason said, and even then I was lucky. Do you think a blood cult is going to underestimate a priestess of purity?
She had a collar like the rest of us, Gary said. They might have thought she couldn't do anything.
Sure, Jason said. But did you notice that her escape took just long enough that if she rushed to save us, she would have been tragically late?
That's thin, Farrah said. So we busted ourselves out, Jason continued, leaving you free to find and question the guy who might have answers. Except he gets silenced before you even start with the questions.
I'm not convinced, Farrah said. You're jumping a lot of gaps there.
I'm not saying anything definitive, Jason said. Like I said, I know I'm biased enough to not see things objectively, but a lot of things are coming up funky on the smell test, so maybe keep your eyes open.
Always do, Gary said.
You were blindsided and handed over to a blood cult, Jason said.
This is really good, Farrah said, after emptying her glass of fruit punch, veering off topic.
I know, right? Jason said, refilling her glass. I'll have to ask what's in it. Most of the local ingredients I've never heard of. Bought a notebook last night at the market to jot down recipes. They heard the front door of the inn slam open again.
That door's going to get ruined, Jason said.
Anissa strode out into the courtyard, storming up to Jason.
Why is everyone talking about you like you're the town hero? She asked, her face filled with fury when she spotted the leech on Jason's shoulder. What is that thing?
That's Colin, Jason said. I've decided to call him Colin, and his friends. Team Colin. Anissa's hand flashed towards it, her bronze rank reflexes too fast for Jason to react. Not too fast for Gary, however, who clamped her wrist in his huge, hairy hand. Anissa glared at Gary as she tugged at her arm, but his grip didn't budge.
Not happening, Gary said.
That thing is obviously evil, Anissa said.
It doesn't matter what it is, Rufus said, striding into the courtyard. While the others turned to look, Jason pulled a knife and pricked his finger, letting Colin the Apocalypse Leech melt back into his bloodstream. He'd bought a small, sharp knife for the purpose after accidentally poisoning himself with the snake-tooth dagger. Looking up after putting the knife away, he saw Anissa and Rufus squaring off.
You knew he had that thing, Anissa accused.
I did, Rufus said, calmly.
He's tainted, she said. We need to burn him.
You don't get a say in what we do anymore, Anissa, especially when it comes to killing people. You're out.
What are you talking about?
This was always a temporary collaboration, Rufus said. The collaboration ends here.
Over him?
She asked, gesturing at Jason. No, Anissa, over you, Rufus said. You decide for yourself when to listen and when to do whatever you like. You're willing to place even your slightest ideal over the well-being of this team, and that is unacceptable. The most important thing in a team is trust, and I don't trust you.
Humans, Anissa said, spitting out the word like a curse.
You're all filth. She turned, marched away, and they heard the door slam as she departed the inn.
Rufus was stewing on the spot, Jason, Farah, and Gary sharing wary looks.
I think we may be paying for a new door, Gary said.
Chapter 31 Taming the Beast.
Mr. Mayor, Rufus said, are you certain you don't want us to investigate the astral space?
We considered it, the mayor said, but we are only one of many places with an aperture leading to that astral space. We have no idea if the other locations are having similar issues, and the cost of a mistake could be critical.
I respect your prudence, Mr. Mayor, Rufus said. As promised, I'll deliver your letters to the Adventure Society and the Magic Society when we reach Greenstone.
Thank you.
The mayor had met them at the inn as they were readying to go. They were travelling on foot, as Anissa had claimed the wagon and its animals for her church, which Rufus didn't bother to argue. Hiram stood alongside the mayor.
Farewell, adventurers, the mayor said, and thanks again to you, Jason. I don't like to think what would happen if those creatures had entered the village.
No worries, Greg, Jason said, shaking the mayor's hand, then Hiram's.
If there's anything I can ever do for you, Hiram said.
Well, if you find another essence, Jason said. I looted all those monsters and you got the only one.
Stuff that, Hiram said. If I find another essence, I'm keeping it. I have more than one grandchild, you know.
Jason laughed. You'll have to introduce me next time I come through, he said.
That shouldn't take long, Farah said. The Adventure Society uses patrol contracts as punishment, and...
She placed a hand on Jason's shoulder. This one has a mouth on him.
Hey,
Jason said, mock hurt on his face. They set out along the road on foot. Jason didn't mind so much, since the wagon hadn't been a comfortable ride over the hard desert ground. On their walk out of the village, it seemed like everyone gave them a friendly wave or a few words of farewell.
We've been here 2 days, Farah muttered.
Not my fault you weren't here when monsters started raining from the sky, Jason said. They set out along the south trail, normally used by quarry transports, leaving the lush village behind for the dry wastes of the desert. Jason was much more comfortable than the last time they endured the arid waste. The reward he received from his quest to protect the village was exactly what he needed. Item: Oasis Bracelet, Iron Rank, Uncommon. A bracelet that draws on the power of water quintessence to bestow the blessings of a personal oasis. Accessory: Bracelet. Effect: Keeps the wearer cool and refreshed. Bracelet energy is consumed at a varying rate according to climate. Effect: Reduces incoming fire and heat damage. This rapidly consumes bracelet energy. Effect: Consume a water quintessence gem to completely refill bracelet energy. The bracelet was a cord looped with small round stones. When he first touched a sapphire-like water quintessence gem to one of the stones, it had vanished. All the stones had turned from a sandy yellow to vibrant blue and would slowly turn back as the magic of the gem was used up. Under the refreshing effect of the bracelet, Jason was happily making his way alongside the others. Now that he wasn't preoccupied with cursing the sun, he had a greater appreciation of the barren desert. It wasn't that different to parts of Central Australia. They were on an unsealed road, compacted to a hard surface by the scorching sun, and heavy wagon loads of quarried stone. Wagons full of green marble rolled along the road in the same direction they were headed, while wagon loads of food came the other way.
"Did you really name your familiar Colin?"
Gary asked as they walked. "Yeah, I told you that," Jason said.
"You should have given it a more intimidating name, like Devourer or something."
"Gary," Jason said, "it's a bloodthirsty apocalypse monster. It's intimidating enough." Farah, Gary, and Jason chatted away as they walked. Rufus was still withdrawn after his confrontation with Anissa. "It's a little strange to be so comfortable in such an inhospitable environment," Jason said. "It gets much worse closer to the coast," Farah said. "At least here you can see some grass, the occasional tree,
There, it's just endless lifeless sand, dry and dead, like the sun scorched all life out of it.
That's cheery, Jason said.
We won't need to trudge through that, Gary said. We're heading south now until we hit the river, then we'll take a boat west to the coast.
They encountered a wagon that had been carrying fresh fruit to the village when it threw a wheel. While Gary and Farah fixed the wagon, Jason and Rufus helped pick up the spilled fruit. Gary used one of his forge essence powers to repair the wheel. Jason was startled as Farah used superhuman strength to lift the wagon so Gary could slip the wheel back onto the axle. Gary at least looked like he had overpowering strength. Seeing the same kind of power from Farah was startlingly incongruous.
What's wrong with you? Farah asked Jason.
I thought you were some kind of spellcaster, Jason said. What's with that strength?
I have some spells, Farah said, but humans have an affinity for special attacks. I spend most of my time up close and personal. The spells just give me a little flexibility.
I don't have any spells at all, Rufus said. Farah having as many as she does is unusual.
The wagon fixed, the grateful teamster left them, walking away eating some kind of juicy melon. Jason, Rufus, and Farah had a slice each, while Gary ate the rest of the melon. Afterward, Rufus seemed a little less broody than he had for most of the day.
Where are they getting fresh fruit in the desert? Jason asked.
You'll get to see for yourself soon enough, Rufus told him. As they traveled, Jason took Rufus aside.
I have kind of a delicate question, Jason said softly.
What's that? Rufus asked.
Well, Jason hesitated, being iron rank does things to your body, right?
That's right.
I haven't needed the toilet in 4 days. I had a sneaky wee back in the hedge maze, but since then, nothing.
Rufus erupted into laughter, drawing the attention of the others.
Really?
Jason asked.
That's normal, Rufus said. Your body doesn't waste anything anymore. It can burn almost anything for fuel. I heard about a man that had to live on tree bark for a month.
That's a myth, Farah said.
No, I know a guy who met the guy who did that, Gary said.
Of course you believe it, Farah said. Mister, I don't need to check what's in the box.
Again with this? How was I meant to know Vivienne would betray us?
Gary asked.
Because it was really obvious, Farah said, and we told you she would.
We did tell you, Rufus agreed.
You two have no sense of romance, Gary said.
Late in the afternoon, they came across a town, enclosed in massive walls made of tan-colored desert stone. It was laid out in a square, with large gates in every wall. Inside was a town mostly built of the same bland bricks as the walls. The town's layout was based around a huge central square, with wide, straight roads leading from the town gates right into it. The square was a bustle of activity, covered in wagons hauling the local green stone.
This is the main distribution point for all the green marble in this region, Farah explained. There are villages like the one we stayed in all through the region. From here it all gets taken south and shipped downriver on barges.
I figured there were more when they told me the name of the village was Northeast Quarry Village 4, Jason said.
No wonder they all just called it the village, Gary said.
What's with the huge walls? Jason asked.
The walls surrounding the town were at least 7 meters high and almost 3 meters thick.
That's for the monster surge, Rufus said.
What's a monster surge? Jason asked.
Every 10 years, Rufus explained, there's a massive increase in the spawn rate of monsters, all across the world, all at the same time. Whole villages evacuate to fortified towns, like this one, which is why most of this town is actually empty. So long as there isn't anyone left in the villages, the monsters largely leave them alone.
So how long has it been since the last monster surge? Jason asked.
11 years, Rufus said.
It's never exactly 10 years, Farah said. It's been as little as 8, or as many as 13. The last few have all come pretty late.
They didn't need to find an inn to stay the night,
Most of the town was composed of transient shelters that villagers used during the surges, which were available to anyone passing through. Mostly that meant teamsters hauling stone one way or food the other. Rufus led them to register in the square, where they were provided basic accommodation without cost. After they found the simple stone cottage to which they had been assigned, Rufus approached Jason.
"There's still a few hours of light," Rufus said. "Come with me for a little bit."
Rufus led them in silence. They went to the edge of town and up one of the many sets of stairs, arriving on the top of the west wall. There he stopped to look out at the horizon, Jason stopping beside him.
"So you fought your first proper monster," Rufus said.
"The Shabs were certainly rougher than the potent hamster," Jason said. Rufus turned his head to glance at Jason.
"Your power to identify things extends to monsters."
"Just their names."
Rufus looked back out at the desert landscape. "It's time you learned how to advance your abilities," he said.
"Actually, that reminds me," Jason said. "I have a bunch of monster cores. Apparently they can raise abilities up?"
Rufus's head snapped sideways to look at him.
"You didn't use any, did you?"
"No, I was waiting to ask you," Jason said. "I thought there might be side effects. After that reaction, I'm assuming there are."
Rufus let out a breath.
"I'm glad. I should have thought to tell you, but I forgot you had an ability to loot monsters. You're lucky. It's a rare power."
"It's not just me that can do that, then?"
"No, but it's a highly coveted ability. I'm starting to get envious," Rufus said.
"Don't humans have their abilities go up faster than everyone else?" Jason asked.
"Everyone else including me, since I'm not human,
which still seems harsh."
"Being human does have its perks," Rufus acknowledged.
"Rub it in, why don't you?"
Jason asked.
"How about you tell me how to raise my abilities so I can start catching up to you three?"
"That's what we're here for," Rufus said. "There are two ways to raise your abilities. One is to use monster cores. Every core increases your abilities a little, but only a little. It takes hundreds of iron rank cores to reach bronze rank, and that's for humans. For everyone else, it takes even more. It takes iron rank cores when you're iron rank, bronze when you're bronze, and so forth. But you should never, ever use this method."
"Do you turn into a monster or something?"
"No," Rufus said. "I said there were two ways of raising your abilities. Every time you use a monster core to raise your abilities, it makes the other method a little less effective. The impact is minimal at first, but every core you use eats into your potential. If you used cores to get to where I am, the top end of bronze rank, then cores would be the only thing that works anymore, and bronze rank isn't that high."
"Couldn't you just hunt up more monsters for cores?" Jason asked.
"You could," Rufus said. "And some do. In the city we're going to, Greenstone, almost everyone uses cores. So long as you have the money to buy them, you can reach bronze rank without ever facing a monster. But every rank requires more and more cores. By the time you reach silver rank, things slow right down as the costs go up significantly. Most core users don't make it to gold."
"If people know this, why would anyone use cores?" Jason asked.
"Because it's easy, and you can buy the cores instead of risking your own neck," Rufus said. "Most aristocratic families only have a few truly powerful adventurers, while the rest use cores. Do you have aristocracy in your world?"
"Sure," Jason said. "We're slowly phasing it out in favor of wealth-based oligarchy, but it's still around."
All right.
"So what's so bad about the second method that people would use these cores?"
"It requires danger and hard work."
"I bet it isn't the danger that stops them," Jason said. "It's the hard work, right?"
"Probably," Rufus said with a chuckle. "The other path to developing your abilities, the real way, has three elements."
Rufus raised three fingers, counting them off as he explained.
"The first element is training. You have to practice pushing your body to its limits, and not just the physical ones. You have to strain against the boundaries of what your four attributes are capable of. Exhaust yourself, body and mind.
Pushing yourself to the limits prepares you to go beyond them.
So, exercise?
Yes, but not just physical exercise. You have to train the mind as well. Perception is part of your spiritual strength, and we will teach you how to exercise it.
How?
Observation training, which is a practical skill as well as a good training technique. Memory games, puzzles, anything that tests the mind can work.
That actually sounds a little fun.
That's good, Rufus said. Training done right will leave you feeling satisfied and empowered. The second element is also about pushing yourself, but in a much more dangerous way.
Fighting monsters.
Fighting monsters, Rufus said. To truly break through your limits, you must truly push up against them. Only with genuine danger can you go further and do more than you ever thought possible.
That's simple enough to understand, if mildly terrifying. What's the third part?
Jason asked.
Meditation.
Meditation, as in just sitting there?
Yes, Rufus said. Meditation is crucial. The other two elements are about breaking through your own limits. Meditation is about consolidating that gain. It's where you take the fleeting moments in which you are better than you've ever been before and make that your new normal.
Is there a mantra or something?
The key is concentrating on the magic flowing inside you. You can feel it, right?
I can, Jason said. It feels unruly, doesn't it? Like some wild creature inside you.
Yeah, it kind of does, Jason said. Using an ability feels like throwing out a piece of meat for it to run out and devour.
That's the sensation after you reach a new rank, Rufus said. You'll slowly bring that beast under your control as your abilities grow. Then you'll reach a new rank and have a new beast to contend with, more powerful than the last.
How does that work with core users?
For them, it's like feeding the beast drugged meat to make it compliant. The beast still has its strength, but the owner can't make use of it properly.
So core users aren't just hampering their future, they're also making themselves kind of crappy in the present.
That's exactly what they're doing, Rufus said.
Rufus directed Jason to sit cross-legged, looking out over the landscape. He spent the remaining daylight guiding Jason through his first meditation, until the sunset lit up the sky with orange and gold. Jason opened his eyes to watch.
You know, Jason said, I think I'm starting to like it here.
That night, as he lay in the small bed in their assigned accommodation, Jason checked his character screen. Jason Asano, race, outworlder. Current rank, iron. Progression to bronze rank, 0%. 0 of 4 essences complete. Attributes, power, blood, iron 0. Speed, dark, iron 0. Spirit, doom, iron 0. Recovery, sin, iron 0. Racial abilities, outworlder. Interface, quest system. Inventory, map. Astral affinity, mysterious stranger. Essences, 4 of 4. Dark, speed, 3 of 5. Midnight eyes, special ability. Iron, 0. 0.4%. Cloak of night, special ability. Iron, 0. 0.2%. Path of shadows, special ability. Iron, 0. 0.00%. Blood, power, 4 of 5. Blood harvest, spell. Iron 0, 0.1%. Leech bite, special attack. Iron 0, 0.1%. Feast of blood, spell. Iron 0, 0.1%. Sanguine horror, familiar. Iron 0, 0.1%. Sin, recovery, 3 of 5. Punish, special attack. Iron 0, 0.1%. Feast of absolution, spell. Iron 0, 0.00%. Sin Eater, special ability, iron, 0, 0.2%. Doom, spirit, 1 of 5. Inexorable doom, spell, iron, 0, 0.1%.
Looking over his abilities, he saw they had barely increased. Some he hadn't even used yet.
I have to try out that shadow teleport.
Chapter 32.
Monster Hunting for Beginners. An hour after they left the walled town, Rufus stopped walking. He took a piece of paper from his pocket, looked it over, then turned his gaze to the desert landscape around them. "This is it," he said, and walked off, leaving the road behind.
"What's going on?"
Gary asked as they followed. Rufus handed him the paper. Gary glanced over it.
"Nice,"
he said, handing the paper to Jason. It was a monster notification, with details and directions. Jason had seen something similar back in the Waterfall Village, but there was apparently a notice board for them in every town and village. "Did you take this from the town we just went through?" Jason asked.
"That's right," Rufus said.
"Are you allowed to just take them?" Jason asked. The location was listed by landmarks that Jason spotted by looking around their current location, a series of distinctively shaped rocky outcroppings.
"You can make copies," Gary said. "When you kill the monster, you mark the copy, and it gets rid of the original. Then you just have to report next time you're at an Adventure Society branch."
"What if someone just makes a copy and destroys it without killing the monster?" Jason asked.
"Why would anyone do that?" Gary asked.
"Because people are terrible," Jason said.
"Is that what you think?" Farah asked. "I'm starting to worry about your world."
"Really?"
Jason asked. "Because when I came to your world, people kept trying to eat and or kill me."
"He has a point,"
Gary said.
"To make proper copies, you need an Adventure Society badge," Rufus said. "The Society can use that to track down who made the copy."
"The badge also tracks the monsters you've killed," Farah said.
"And they can use it to find your body when you die," Gary said.
"Very comforting," Jason said. "So why are we going after this monster?"
"We're not," Rufus said.
"You are."
"I am?"
"You are.
New quest, adventure notice, giant desert moor spider. Local townsfolk have spotted a monster in the area that matches the description of a giant desert moor spider. Slay the creature before it becomes aggressive and starts attacking travelers. Objective, defeat giant desert moor spider, 0 of